CEOs need to stop wasting their really valuable time, you know, doing, what is it, $25 an hour work, $50 an hour work, $100 an hour work, whatever that is. It is way below your pay grade.
Welcome back to Evolving Your Workplace, where we discuss real-time workplace issues with experts to get you the best solutions for your company. I'm your host, Carol Schultz, longtime executive coach and professional recruiter and best-selling author. Let's get into it.
Today, we're going to talk about one of my favorite topics, babysitting a company versus leading it. And to discuss his experience as a leader, we have Rohit Kumar, founder and CEO of Chapter Apps with us. Rohit, we've gotten to know each other pretty well over the last couple of months, and I'm really, really delighted to have you here today. Tell our audience a little bit about what you do at Chapter Apps.
You know, like with every company right now, which is doing something interesting, it has to be in the field of AI. And so what we do today is we provide enterprises and companies, large and medium sized, with AI solutions, because everyone's thinking about how to make an impact. Mm-hmm. And the part that we have seen good traction with and good success with is the sales assistants and the employee assistants that, you know, the first version of chatbots have come in and proven. Mm-hmm. And that's and then obviously we are expanding more from there. This is not how we started several years ago, but mm-hmm. this is where the demand and where the focus is now.
Well, let's take a minute and talk about that kind of at a high level. You know, you founded the company in 2014 with your wife, and tell us how you started out and how the pivot occurred.
Sure. So, you know, when I was starting at that point in time, the big trend happening in the world was smartphones. The iPhone 3, 4, 5, it was just sort of coming in. Mm-hmm. And around that time, I was working in a publishing company. And the focus was, how do we get more the content in the hands of more people, right? More students. So the hottest sectors to invest in at that time were education, technology related to that. And so my premise was that people would no longer buy the full book. They would buy a chapter at a time. Hence, we started the name Chapter Apps, right? But essentially, in my mind, it's always been, you get what you need, that little bit piece of information that you need to move forward in your work, in whatever you do. And we found more traction in the corporate world, and all the big learning management system players were not really doing mobile apps at that point in time. So we were one of the first ones, and we started with skepticism from people saying, you mean people will actually learn on the mobile? I said, well, people are going to consume all their content on the mobile, whether it's streaming, whether it's YouTube, whether it's Netflix. It'll also be related to what they need to do their jobs better. You want everything on your fingertips, literally.
Mm-hmm. Which is, of course, what's come to fruition, hasn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And then when did you make this pivot over to AI?
It started about 2 years ago. So when ChatGPT came along, mm-hmm. 2.5, I would say.
Yeah, around 2022.
Yeah. So November 22, it was launched. Within a few months, we were all talking to our customers. They were saying, what are you doing around AI? And so we said, listen, we think, you know, you've been asking for a very simple feature for, especially during the pandemic, is, can I put my PDF on my LMS? Can I search through the PDF? And I said, this is a solution. It's not just one PDF. It's all your PDFs. And this is what your salespeople have been asking for, because when they're in front of a customer and they don't know the answer and they know it's in some document, then searching the document, they're searching the video, and then they have to get back to the customer. We said, if we give them this ability, they will actually be able to solve this problem on the spot. And it should lead to higher customer satisfaction, more deal closure, more cross-selling and upselling of products that they weren't even pitching because they weren't sure how to pitch them. Mm-hmm. And now this will become their assistant to do that.
That's fantastic. So when we talk about the word babysitting, what does this look like on a day-to-day as a CEO? What do you consider that to be?
It depends on where I have to spend my time. So if mm-hmm. things are not moving forward with the next level of managers you have in the team and the individuals, oftentimes in a smaller company, it becomes very visible if things are stuck. And they're usually stuck because of two reasons, I think. the person who has to do it either does not know what to do mm-hmm. or they do not know how to do it. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they, and this happens more in bigger companies, they don't even know they have to do it, right? That because mm-hmm. they assumed it wasn't their job.
Right. Well, that's a communication issue, right?
Right. So that happens in bigger companies. Mm-hmm. It becomes, when it happens in smaller companies, it becomes very visible.
Yes.
Because you don't make progress as a team. And so if the manager is unable to drive this, that's where I have to then come in and sort of say, have you done this? Have you done this? You know, it's like ensuring that the baby has done all the things that the baby needed to do before they went to bed. Mm-hmm. You know, have you brushed your teeth? Have you done this? So those are the kind of things that you wish you don't have to do, but it happens once in a while.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's normal. And I'm curious, considering you and your wife are co-founders in this business together, and she currently is in India and you're in San Francisco. And, you know, so you're not only in a partnership and a marriage, you're in a partnership and a business. And how is that affecting your relationship, your business relationship, pros, cons, challenges?
Yeah, so I think the challenges increase when you're apart between India and the US. Mm-hmm. When you're together, obviously things are a lot easier because you can work during the work hours and then you can go home and say, we're not going to talk about this till the morning until we get back into the office so that you're not getting the two mixed. Now, when you're apart and with a time difference, then it becomes harder to compress work and personal in 30 minutes or 1 hour on either side of the day. So either it's a work call or it's a personal call, or sometimes it's both, and then it becomes neither also. So it's sort of, that's, I would say, the challenge, right? But it's very important for the business today that somebody is there mm-hmm. managing the team, and she's a much better people person than I am. So she's able to give them leadership and direction and mm-hmm. still stay hands off. And I sort of look into what the customer is expecting, and I focus on those deliveries from the customer side.
Got it. Well, that certainly makes sense to put, you know, we should all in leading companies have be the expert and do what we're expert at, right? And leave the right other things to other experts that are good at what they're doing. So what would you say you never get time to do that you would like to be focusing on regarding the business?
Well, I think I'd love to be focusing more on business development and outreach. Mm. And I think part of the reason for the relocation to San Francisco has been that when I'm back in India with the team, then I get sucked into the day-to-day, mm. right? Whereas the day here now is when India is shut. And
right.
I have the full freedom to think about market outreach. Oh, how should I do a certain campaign? What partnerships? Go meet people, explore, have discussions. And the biggest benefit of being in San Francisco at this time is that this is the epicenter mm-hmm. of the entire AI industry. Yep. That's becoming bigger and bigger. Mm-hmm. And just as an example, you know, this past week, we were building a voice agent and we were using a technology from a company called LiveKit. Mm-hmm. LiveKit had a developer day. We were facing issues for a month on that our team was unable to technically solve. Spending, you know, 30 minutes with them in a one-on-one session after their developer day, we got some direction from them on what we needed to do. In 48 hours, we've already seen, you know, a 2x improvement or a 3x improvement in the performance of what we were doing just because of some things they could tell us, right? Mm-hmm. Similarly, we're stuck in another issue, went to another company's office yesterday to discuss it, and they gave some pointers, and boom, you know, we're making progress on that too. So it's, I think the speed at which I have to be here to do outreach, to make our offering better for our customers, mm-hmm. to understand what customers are taking from other providers like ours, mm-hmm. like ourselves, I think that's where I'm seeing the biggest benefit of being here. And I, you know, obviously when I do this, at the back of my mind, I worry about, are we able to deliver? Is our team able to meet the customer expectations?
Well, right. We all know what happens when we have unmet expectations, right? Just True. Come up with any negative adjective you can.
Right.
What would you say, Rohit, is your biggest bottleneck to growth right now? I know, you know, part of the reason you're also starting to expand a little bit into the US, you know, with employees. But what would you say is your biggest bottleneck right now to your growth?
I think the right talent, right? Quite honestly, I think it's the right talent. And the right talent means that I can then focus on what I do best.
Correct.
And the talent focuses on what I need to hire them to do it, right? And so as the, you know, when we started the business together, we literally first started with outsourcing a bunch of things. We said we won't hire more than one employee to begin with. And then we had five employees. And then we decided to bring in the tech in-house because we had outsourced the tech
sure.
in the first 9 months to you know, because we wanted the POC to be done faster.
Right, of course.
And then we got our first engineer in, then we got a second engineer in, et cetera. So it's literally, you know, the evolution has been fascinating to see that you only hire when you realize, I don't need to be doing this stuff. This is too simple. Somebody junior can do this.
That's right.
I need to focus on the bigger things. And I think that's been the evolving journey of an entrepreneur, right? So, and at each, almost every day, you have to wake up and say, what can I delegate, right? And what I, what do I wish I could delegate? And I may not have the right person for that today, but can I do that? Can I outsource some part of this part? You know, and those are the kind of things I think that I go through, you know.
That's the really important nugget right there that you just said, because I have said this ad nauseum. I've said it on podcasts I've been on. I've said it on my own podcast that, you know, CEOs need to stop wasting their really valuable time, you know, doing, what is it, $25 an hour work, $50 an hour work, $100 an hour work, whatever that is. It is way below your pay grade, where you should be using your genius, as you've just pointed out, to actually grow your company, grow and scale your company, right?
Absolutely.
And, you know, the challenge becomes, at what point do you have that epiphany, you meaning the general founder, right? CEO. At what point do you have that epiphany and realize I can't keep going on like this? This is just not working for me.
Yeah. And I think Shalini, my partner, is much better than me in spotting these. So she's able to spot and say, why are you even doing this?
Yeah, right? I love that.
You know, why are you looking to test the mobile app on your own when you can hire an intern to do it for free?
Yeah.
No.
Well, yeah, there's a good point. I mean, even if you had to pay somebody, right?
Yes.
But I, you know, so I'm going to dig into that a little bit more. What's going on inside your head that's got you doing this rather than listening to her, you know, or that you didn't have this epiphany prior to her saying this to you? Why are you spending your time doing this?
So I think it comes from the direct feedback from the customer, right? So if the customer, you know, says, have you even checked your own app yourself? Right? Do you realize this doesn't work? Or, you know, every time we do a new release, something breaks, right? So the customer comes and says, haven't you tested this, right? And so I said, no, I've asked my team to do it. Now, either is the person reporting to me who has to ensure the testing is done has missed it, and that could be because they're busy and they said they'll do it tomorrow, and tomorrow never comes. And so then I actually started actually observing what do the tech billionaires do, right? The ones who've really built successful businesses.
Yeah.
And I found that each of them actually took immense pride in playing with their own product. And so part of that comes from that sort of association that I've made, that they never lose sight of what they're building. So part of me says, okay, I need to do this. Now, obviously, there's a balance, right? Maybe I just need to do it for 5 minutes, but someone else needs to do it for much longer, right? Because if people know that I am testing it, they will actually therefore do their job more thoroughly, right? So it's, I think maybe that's, and that's the balance, right? Because then you suddenly say, you know, I might as well go through and finish the whole test.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And you know, it makes me think, why is it that somebody needs to finish their work only because you're testing it?
And that's the problem that you find in smaller companies, because you can't attract the best talent unless you've, you know, you're a unicorn, you've raised a lot of money. I mean,
yeah,
good talent, Good talent.
I don't know if I agree with that, Rohit. I really don't. I mean, I think that, I mean, I certainly hear what you're saying, but...
What would be your perspective?
Well, listen, if you've got, let me just digress here just for a minute. You've taken how much investment so far?
Like about a couple of million.
Okay. And you've really, you know, just gone off of that. And do you have plans to raise more money, or are you going to just continue along the road and...
Well, we always need more money to grow.
Right. Okay. So what I have discovered in my over 30 years of doing what I do is that if you've got a really compelling story, but not just the story, but the executive team to back it up, and I mean, you know, yes, the right comp plan comes into place. Now, nobody's going to a startup because somebody is paying them a fortune, because that just doesn't happen in startups, right? Until they get to a certain point. You know, they can't pay like, you know, I mean, fill in the blank, right? Google, you know, whoever, right? Facebook. And, you know, but there's pros and cons, right? I tell people all the time, I wouldn't touch one of those publicly traded companies if you paid me all the money in the world, because you're useless to them when they deem you to be useless to them. That doesn't happen in companies like yours, in companies, you know, in the more startup space, right? So that's really what I mean, is by having that compelling argument, knowing how to ask the right questions of those candidates, and then selling them on, well, once they've sold you, of course, selling them on why you're doing is something special. And let's face it, if you want people to go to a startup, you got to give them equity, right? RSUs, whatever that looks like, depending on where you are. Right. Now, you're 11 years old. So even if you are doing that and continue to do that, it's not as much as it was potentially earlier on, where the risk was greater. So, you know, I always believe what you're looking for is somebody who has been in startups before, so they understand that culture, first of all, that a startup is not really about. I'll never forget, one of my clients said to me, this is probably back in 2015 or maybe 2014. He said, Carol, if somebody mentions the words to you, work-life balance, they are not for us, right? So it depends where you are in the life cycle of your company. And from that standpoint, that's what makes it harder. I think that's a little bit of a cop-out.
I'm just saying that, I think in answer to your question about why can't I see this, that I don't need to do this, is I think it's part of it is, well, the most important part is actually, do I actually have confidence? And maybe I don't, right? Which is why I'm doing it.
That's a really authentic thing to say. And I appreciate that, because so often, I don't know if you're familiar with the term founder syndrome, but at a high level, this is the founder who says, nobody else can do what I do. I don't really get that from you in the conversation we've had, but maybe in a couple of little spots.
No, I don't think it's not that I can't do.
Right.
I think it's a question of, I don't want to be surprised by the customer.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm doing it, right?
Right.
So I'm just sort of subconsciously sort of preempting well, something.
Okay. So if you had to identify one thing, if solved, you may have already mentioned this, what would make the biggest impact in your business growth? One thing, if solved, that would make like the biggest impact.
I think if we were meeting all the customer expectations that our team has committed to without me getting involved, then I would actually be able to, one, my confidence to that I don't have to worry about it would go up. And number two, then I'd be focusing more on growing the business.
Right. Let's talk about the growth that you're starting here in the United States. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, it's, enterprise AI is hot everywhere around the world. And the U.S. companies are leading the way everywhere.
Right.
So the amount of adoption that you see in the Fortune 500 is huge. But there are another 3,000 companies that, or maybe more, that need it.
Yeah.
And they may not be getting it at the price points that they're getting.
They need. Yeah.
They need. Yeah. Now they can afford. And I think that's where we are seeing our window of opportunity to come in and provide the expertise and the offerings that we are providing for actually much larger companies in India. Most of our Indian customers are over 5,000 employees. So we are actually handling a lot of scale. Here, we could, you know, we are targeting people with 500 to 2,500 employees mm-hmm. as our sweet spot. It's the mid-market mm-hmm. that we're going after. Mm-hmm.
What's your average deal look like?
So the average deal size that we like is about 100K or more in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what we are working towards.
And what's the sales cycle look like?
It's about a 3 to 6 month sales cycle if you're catching them at the right time. Mm-hmm. And I do believe that right now a lot of budgets are being put in multiple mm-hmm. places.
Yeah, right.
So in calendar Q1, we expect some positive decisions, which will impact our growth favorably.
You've told me that you're really just starting to hire some people here. What is that? What are the roles that they're doing? What are the expectations?
So a business development head or a sales head, right? And possibly a technical architect as well, right? Mm-hmm. Those two are currently in the pipeline that we'd like. The technical architect, simply because there's so much changing yeah. on the underlying platforms, mm-hmm. it's better to have someone here who's plugged into the entire ecosystem.
Yeah.
Right. From a technical angle, because mm-hmm. then they can evaluate, they can test, they can then we can feed that back to the other team, which is in India.
What's your org chart look like?
Yeah, well, you know, I have, broadly speaking, three direct reports.
Okay.
They are now obviously dotted line to me and hard line to Shalini because she's there.
Right.
But it's really the head of engineering and one is the head of operations, you know, managing the non-technical mm-hmm. operations. Mm-hmm. And one is the head of project management and products for from a customer-facing perspective.
Interesting. So, you know, the reality is this, as AI is important as it is to companies, they will make the money for it when necessary, I believe, right? I mean, sure, you'd like to get in at the first of the year, but you still have to sell throughout the other three, you know, the other 9 months of the year, right? So what do you think this all kind of looks like for your growth trajectory over 2026?
Well, we believe that while budgets are not growing at 100%.
Correct.
We should see our growth at 100%.
Got it. Over where you were this year?
Yeah, yeah. So, and I think it should easily be 100, maybe 150%. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is very simple, that many people have tried pilots. Not everyone has succeeded. Some things have taken longer. Mm-hmm. And some things haven't given the ROI. So a lot of times customers are looking at saying, okay, can someone else come in and make this work? Mm-hmm. And that's where we come in because we have got successful projects delivered. And earlier this week, Microsoft reached out to us saying, you've done this project here. Another of our customers has struggled with it. Mm-hmm. And so we're passing the lead on to you. Can you please talk to them and help them solve this problem?
That's music to your ears, huh? When that happens?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's lovely when that happens. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, that's what we are looking at and saying, mm-hmm. that's why we're confident our growth should be more than 100%. Mm-hmm.
Rohit, how are you actually finding your prospects? Inbound, outbound, networking, what's that look like?
Well, you know, interestingly, 80% of the deals we win are usually inbound, which is very interesting.
That's really interesting.
Right?
Yeah.
Because that means people who are looking for us and coming to us have already mm-hmm. decided why they want to come to us.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So 80% of the deals we win, I'd love that to be, I'd love more deals to come in that way. So what it means is really improving our online presence and our right. visibility, because mm-hmm. that will increase more inbounds coming to us.
Of course.
Right. And I'm seeing that people who track us follow me on LinkedIn. They see these things. A friend of mine or theirs will tell them. And that's how they will actually make that presence, mm-hmm. you know, that inbound request will come to us. So mm-hmm. so I think that's a very important aspect of what we're doing. And the second thing is obviously you can't sort of just say, oh, I only win 20% of outbound. Why do I focus on it? So we are actually saying, well, why can't we make it 30, 70 and 30 mm-hmm. and grow that, the 30% of the business that we can convert. And again, it's the same process. There's outbound, but there's lead gen, there is direct outreach. We, for whatever reason, weren't aggressively going after our competition. But this year we've started that, right? So we know that we have a value proposition that is stronger.
Mm-hmm.
We're actually going, and without naming the competition, but right. We know who the customer is, we are actually going and aggressively saying, are you struggling with these kind of things? And this is where, you know, we can talk to you. And I believe that will also result in improving that outbound.
Right.
Win rate.
So let's talk about that a little bit, because I also, as a founder and CEO, and I'm sure you do too, am littered with spam on a daily basis, both to my email. I mean, if I opened up my email right now, which I'm going to do, I have in my junk mail, 600 pieces of junk mail. 600. Okay.
A lot. I don't think I get it.
And the thought of even looking at that, which I won't do, causes me great angst. But that's just email. That's the stuff that lands in spam. Then there's the stuff that does land into my inbox. And then, of course, then there's LinkedIn. So I'm always really curious about the outbound strategy, how you're actually doing it. Are you sending out LinkedIn messaging? Are you sending out emails? Or is somebody actually picking up the phone and calling the prospect?
No, absolutely right. I think we have to, we are doing more calling now. We weren't doing calling earlier. Mm-hmm. But as you can see, I see my own behavior, which is what you've just said.
Yeah.
You miss mails, you don't read them. LinkedIn messages, by and large, I don't think I have responded favorably to most people, you know, or to most inquiries that come in. So I would say it's less than a 1% response.
Yeah, same with me. Yeah, I hardly ever respond.
Sometimes sort of it's a timing issue, right? When you're mm-hmm. thinking about something and somebody reaches out with that, that's when I respond. So it's no, you know, the person who sent it has no control on what would sort of come through my head
mm-hmm.
and make me respond. The same message, I may not respond a month prior to that or a month later, right? So it just happened at that particular point in time. Mm-hmm. So I think calling people is really where the focus is now. So we are actually, that's
wonderful.
One of the things we're doing is we are looking for somebody who can actually make those outbound calls.
Good.
I don't think voice AI is ready to do that for you right now. I mean, it's improved a lot.
Yeah.
Right. But I'm hoping that sometime in the next 6 to 9 months, we'll have somebody who will call as an assistant saying, I'm calling on from my office and we wanted to set up a meeting. And if an AI bot could do that, that would increase my chances of outbound, you know, without the other person knowing it's not a human, right?
Right.
I think we're getting there because someone can at least call for those kind of appointments. And it, you know, and the ideal situation, that phone call goes from my number, you know, so people.
Yeah, well, that'll certainly, you know, help, you know, if when it is any good, right? And I'm sure it's not really if, it's a matter of when, but, you know, AI still has a long way to go. I can almost always tell when something's been written to AI by AI that's being sent to me. Yeah. You know, there's as somebody said, there's the flattery, you know, then there's, we do this, and then there's, hey, how about a phone call? And it's all exactly the same all the time.
Wow. Wow.
It's exactly, not word for word, but it's the same exact, like I said. First thing structure. Is flattering about something I've done or my writing at Inc. magazine or whatever that might be, right? And then it's a formula. I'm thinking, okay, how is it that everyone is using this formula? Because AI is writing it. And AI is not that creative to do it differently at this point. And as soon as I see that, I'm like, oh, okay, you got AI writing that for you.
Yeah.
You know? But I do believe that'll, you know, that will eventually work, right? Is there anything that I have not asked you that you feel that we should talk about?
Well, I think, you know, in a prior conversation, you had mentioned about the chief of staff role. So, you know, I think it'll be good to talk a little bit about that, because I'm thinking about it, right? If that's the right structure or construct to keep in place. And I can see the benefits of it. You know, when I worked in Microsoft, there was a role called a business manager who was, you know, somebody earlier in their career, sort of, let's say late 20s, early 30s, would go work directly with the head of a business unit. And they would actually make a follow-up on a number of things that the head of the business unit wanted done. And that was seen as a career progress. You know, if you had been a business manager to Steve Ballmer at some point or to Satya, you know, so I would assume whoever was Satya's business manager has done probably, has gone really well, high up in Microsoft by now, right? But those are the kind of things I think that role, and I did see that earlier in, again, in my mind, it was a large company luxury.
Right.
As opposed to an entrepreneur's sort of must do.
Right.
And I think I'm just sort of wrapping my head around right now.
Yeah. I mean, that's interesting because, you know, we posted something this week with Batman and Robin, right? You know, Robin is your chief of staff, basically. Right. or your co-pilot, right? You've got the pilot and the co-pilot. And the co-pilot can do pretty much everything the pilot can do. And they can take over, right? They can take the wheel and handle things for you so that you don't have to do that yourself. And every chief of staff is differently. I mean, I have the things that I do. And the things that I do, of course, come from, you know, a 28-year executive coaching career, a 30-year professional recruiting career, and the fact that I spent the majority of my career working with startups, right? I like to think I've seen every mistake a founder can make. I'm sure I haven't seen every mistake, but I'd like to think I'm pretty close to it. I mean, not too much surprises me anymore after over 30 years in this business, right? And when founders, CEOs start to really realize that they are drowning in 6 inches of water, right? And I mean, I recently had someone who, you know, said he's on 17 calls a week with clients. They have a recruiting arm of what he does also. And I said, wait a minute, why are you on those calls? Like, why are your people not competent to have those calls?
Correct.
And that goes right back to the people issues you talked about earlier in this conversation.
No, absolutely. In fact, you know, one of the first things I think is that I'm seeing is by not being in the same time zone as the team in India, when they have now calls with customers in Asia or Europe, I can't join those calls most of the time. Right. And so part of it is sort of saying, okay, you have to let them grow and take responsibility.
Yes, you do.
Right. And as a founder, a very successful founder I just met this past week said, I just came back from paternal leave. And in the last 1 month, the team did more than they've ever done in the last 2 years.
Amazing.
And he said, you know, that's the best thing for me. Right.
That's right.
As a founder. Right. I think that's really what resonated. Right.
Yeah, that's really fantastic. It is hard to let go. Like I said, it's that control. Well, I have to look at the app myself, and you know, I've got customers calling me, and I need to make sure that they're being serviced. Well, no, you don't need to be. That's why you have cut. That's why you should. And if you don't have it, I would assert you need it. Customer success.
Right. Absolutely.
Okay. You're not so big that you need more than one person to do that job.
True.
And that's the person who spends their life day in and day out reaching out proactively to the customer. Let's talk about how things are working for you. Are you having any problems? What can we help you with? You know, that not only does that make your customers happy, it reduces your churn.
Absolutely.
Right? And you've now got customers who are in love with you. Oh my God, that's so nice.
Absolutely.
I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoy our conversations. And I am just so glad that we met and I was able to invite you onto the show. So, Rohit Kumar, founder and CEO of Chapter Apps, currently residing in San Francisco. Thanks for being with me today.
Well, thank you very much, Carol. Real pleasure to be here. And it's been great to go through these conversations. It makes me reflect and think strategically to get away from the day-to-day. It makes me a better founder. So thank you.
You're welcome.